TR's News Collective.
At large.
Is that too short?
No.
At large.
From CITR's News Collective. Lola, why don't you try it?
Take. You're listening to At Large from the News Collective at CITR.
Since the 1960s, the development of rental housing in Vancouver has been in decline. This decline is meaningful because rental housing is inherently cheaper than buying housing. So as a result, the city has increasingly become less affordable for low and middle income folks. In 2009, the city reacted to this problem by creating a program to incentivize the development of rental housing. The program began as a pilot called STIR, or Short-Term Incentives for Rental, and morphed into Rental 100 in 2012. And under these programs, there's been a massive increase in market rental housing construction in the city. Some argue this has made Vancouver more livable for renters. But Rental 100 still didn't solve Vancouver's affordability crisis. And in fact, the city's high rental prices have continued to soar even after the program's implementation. So while this program did succeed in increasing rental stock, renter rights and housing groups like the Vancouver Tenants Union and Abundant Housing find themselves at odds over whether Rental 100 is effective or ineffective at making the city more livable and affordable for renters.
Yes to a massive build of non-market housing. Yes to taxing wealthy landowners.
We are against the destruction of affordable rental. There is no justice in displacing people for rents that double what they're currently paying.
Yes to going further than Rental 100. No to dismantling it.
Waiting for those buildings to fix the market is just relying on market logic and trickle-down
economics.
Pushing
for the money to be taken away from an existing rental housing program rather than from taxing landowners. Please rethink
this. Tenants in affordable rentals are being displaced for the last approved Rental 100 building. Those people need homes desperately and won't be able to find them in their community.
Vacancy rates are a gift to landlords that entrench their power over tenants.
Why does improvement have to be predicated on displacement?
Let's not ignore reality.
With the publication of an article in the Georgia Strait on February 7th, titled "Housing Activist Calls City of Vancouver's For-Profit Affordable Rentals an Oxymoron," Twitter was filled with folks arguing passionately for and against Rental 100. For context, Rental 100 is a housing program that incentivizes the construction of 100% purpose-built rental. This rental needs to meet the rates stipulated by the city guidelines for, and I quote, for-profit affordable rental housing. And if these rates are not exceeded, the developer will receive an exemption from payment of development cost levies. The city's current guidelines for affordable rental housing are, for the east side of the city, around $1,500 for one studio, around $1,700 for a bedroom, $2,500 for two bedrooms, and $3,300 for three bedrooms. And on the west side, it's a bit more. To put it very simply, the argument from pro-housing groups like Abundant Vancouver is that more rental stock will add rental options to the market and decrease the overall cost of renting in the city. On the opposite side, the Vancouver Tenants Union, a renter advocacy group, thinks that because the cost of affordable rent under the Rental 100 program is so high, it will raise the overall cost of rent in that neighborhood.
We'll move to hearing from the public. So let me get the speakers list out here.
On Tuesday, February 12th, a public hearing was held at City Hall to discuss the redevelopment of a property at 1906 West 4th and 815 Commercial Drive. Both projects were being proposed under the Rental 100 program. The redevelopment at 815 Commercial was the more contentious one. And that's because if it goes forward, it will cause the displacement of potentially more than 20 people. While council listened to public speakers and asked questions, the dilemma Councillor Colleen Hardwick kept coming back to was whether council should accept these Rental 100 projects or reject them and instead see condos built.
I don't know if I'm not making myself clear here, but it's kind of one of those difficult either-or questions. The existing zoning would allow the applicant to build market condos that people could sell at market rates that are generally, as we've established, unaffordable for people to even buy, versus being able to create more units going up to 6 stories for people to rent, albeit at more expensive rents that are pre-existing. That's the question that we're having before us right now, and this is going to be one that we're hearing over and over and over again. So, to your point earlier, so if this neighborhood is faced with market condos or more expensive rentals, what would you choose?
Market condos.
Really?
Okay, well, thank
you. As it turns out, some people who spoke at the public hearing on Tuesday against the redevelopment at 815 Commercial Drive believe condos are less harmful to renters than rental units built under the city's existing Rental 100 program. Sarah Sagai, a housing activist and steering committee member of the Vancouver Tenants Union, was one of those people. We reached her by phone to discuss Rental 100 and why she thinks it's harmful to renters.
Can you tell me just briefly why you oppose Rental 100?
Sure. So Rental 100 is an interesting program, and the idea of that is that the city will subsidize construction of rentals on the premise that just building rentals will solve or have a major positive impact on the housing crisis. The problem here is not building rentals. I'm not opposed to building rentals. I'm opposed to the fact that these new rentals are subsidized by public money without providing the houses that most renters need.
Right.
So the starting rents in these buildings are often between $1,400 to $1,600 for a studio, and then keep going up from there. And it's also important to keep in mind that these are just the starting rents, and because we don't have rent control tied to the unit in this province, unfortunately, when the first tenant moves out, the rents can go even further up.
Right.
So this is a program that's creating luxury rentals, essentially. And then there's other problems with the way the developments under this program are implemented, is that usually they end up going on top of existing rentals.
Mm.
So we have a situation where existing, usually super affordable rentals are being destroyed in order to make room for luxury rentals. There are long-term tenants in the building, and for that reason, they pay low rents. And then the owner comes in and they realize that it's possible to use this program to subsidize their construction of rentals, and they sort of use that as an excuse to tear down the building and get rid of long-term tenants and start charging much higher rents.
Right. So on that topic, during Tuesday's public hearing, Councillor Melissa DeGenova said that there are some people in the city who are overhoused, meaning there are people who can afford to pay more than they do for housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so by having rental developments, folks who can pay more will move into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea, I guess. And where they left that rental stock would be freed up for people who are lower income. What do you think of that?
Right. So this is a myth, essentially. There's a theory, it's an old theory, it's a right-wing theory that was developed in the 60s and the 70s. It's called filtering theory. It's sort of the opposite of trickle-down economics, it's trickle-up. This idea that if you build luxury rentals, the people who are living in the affordable rentals, they'll move up to the new ones, mm-hmm. and they'll free up the space for the lower-income people. In reality, first of all, this is misunderstanding the rental crisis. The problem there is not that there's a large portion of affordable rentals occupied by richer people. That's not the problem we're having right now.
Mm.
The problem we have is that we don't have enough low-rent buildings. That's the problem. But even let's assume there is a portion of renters who make more money and can afford to pay higher rents than they currently do. These people are not going to move out to higher rent situation. They're just not going to. Like, most people are not going to do that because that doesn't make logical sense. If you have good rent, you usually stay there. Let's say some people choose to move to a nicer place because they can afford it. What happens is that when these people move out, because we don't have vacancy control, the landlord can jack up the rent in the old place to the same level as the new constructions. So this is the new construction setting the standard for everything and pushing up the definition of affordable, and in a way kind of eradicating the existing affordability because we don't have vacancy control, by sort of setting the standard at a much higher level.
Right. And so we have very, very low vacancy rates in the city for renters. So we do need more rental stock. And yeah, in this case, people are being displaced at 815 Commercial Drive. But say it was, say it's a different development where people aren't being displaced. I know that you've criticized the rates that Rental 100 sets because they are more expensive than the average Vancouverite can pay. But what a critic might say to that is that if developers don't, you know, set the rental rates that high, then they won't be able to make enough profit to make the development affordable. So, like, what do you say to that?
I think this isn't a good city policy. First of all, this is a very expensive way of constructing rentals from the city's point of view, because they're foregoing between $500,000 to $1 million in tax revenue per development.
Right, by waiving the DCL costs, right?
Yeah, the DCL waivers, exactly. Yeah. And the result of it is not that many rental units anyway, because the city does not have it in its capacity to build mass numbers of rentals.
Yeah.
So let's say the goal is to increase the vacancy rate. The effect under this program is still going to be very, very, very marginal, and it's not going to solve the problem. And it's actually a very expensive way of subsidizing rental construction. And on top of that, it's not constructing for the people who need it right now. It's building for people who may move out of their lower rent or may not. It's building rentals for people who want to own homes, but they can't, so they choose to rent for now.
But so then why get rid of Rental 100? Why not add to it? Like, if it can't sufficiently solve the problem, it's, do you think it's making it worse?
I think it's using available funds at the city level, available incentives, available tools to basically subsidize private profit. And the city doesn't need to do that. I think the city needs to protect the lower income people. It needs to build for lower income people. The city could partner up with nonprofits instead of focusing on building for profits. That's one solution. There is other things. So I think the market can do its own thing when it comes to for profit. But the government programs and subsidies should be used to protect lower-income people and to build however they can for lower-income people who need it right now. And I don't think I ever said that we should get rid of Rental 100 or whatever.
Okay.
I just think the definition of affordability needs to be fixed. And I also think that if a rental is being subsidized by the city, there needs to be actual affordability measures in place. One of them is actually affordable starting rents. The second step is to tie rents to the unit. So the problem with Rental 100 is that there is no plan for long-term affordability in these buildings. But there are ways that you could fix that, potentially. And I'm not a policy expert here. I'm not a planner. But I'm sure if the city had the will to bring back the tax revenue that's lost, actually work toward the affordability that we need, I'm sure the developers could be encouraged to forego more of their profits, give back to the city, and in the long run, create the affordability that we need. It's just that the city needs to ask. And if we keep sitting back and saying, oh, they won't build if we don't give up all of the taxes, and this is like neoliberalism, this is what we've been dealing with for the last 40 years. It's tax cuts for the rich. If we let the free market take over, we will eventually get something for the poor people. And it's been failing for the last 40 years. There's just no evidence that that theory works.
Right. Some folks on the other side would also say, though, Rental 100 isn't the free market. It is an incentive program. So it is setting some rules slightly different than the market. But also, so just so I understand you correctly, you're saying that if instead the local municipal government in Vancouver took the DCL fees that they are waiving under Rental 100, if they built affordable, truly affordable rental with nonprofits, you think that would cost the city the same amount, or would they still have to get additional funds from, say, the provincial government to build that affordable stock?
I mean, if you can build rentals by waiving DCLs and by giving density bonuses, et cetera, with the for-profit sector, you can definitely get better results if you work with nonprofit sector, don't you think? Like, because you're taking the profit out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
It just rational, that if you work with nonprofit sector, you could make probably a lot more affordable homes. There's a person speaking in favor of Council Carr's motion last night at the City Hall with Brightside Community Homes, which is a nonprofit housing organization, and she was saying that their average rent in all of the buildings that they own, and they own a lot of buildings across the city, the average rent is $650, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
And the way they are able to do that is because they've been around for a long time and they've paid off their mortgage, and essentially they're able to just provide these low rents to people, and they have a mandate to house seniors and people with disability. So if that's possible, then why isn't the city working with the nonprofit sector to create that kind of a situation in 50 years' time? Because if you're thinking long term, then you actually need to have a plan for long term. You can't just work off of a myth that hasn't been working. There's no evidence that it will work. The city needs to do more. If the goal is to create long-term affordability, you need to show that what you're doing is actually going to work in 50 years' time. And if the plan is to do short-term affordability, then obviously you need to do other things, maybe also work with nonprofits or build social housing, or the tax revenues that you're foregoing could be spent building modular homes, or it could be spent on anything that would address the crisis right now.
Well, why do you think if this rental incentive program is so flawed and is not producing affordable housing, why do you think the city set it up this way instead of incentivizing actually like welfare rate rental stock?
Because we had a Vision Vancouver majority government for the last 10 years. There was a lot of opposition to the original program, but as we know, the way things were with the Vision Council, because they had majority, they just rammed things through, and they didn't listen to the community. So anyone who does that research, they can see that this wasn't a popular program when it was created, and it's been around for 10 years. So where's the results that we've been promised? It has not helped ease the pressure on renters in the last 10 years? I don't think so. Can't see the results. And there's a lot of articles actually coming out that shows supply is not going to fix the housing crisis. The fundamentally, the problem with this kind of program is that it assumes that more supply of any kind will help fix the market. So at Vancouver Tenants Union, we operate from the assumption that market is broken, we can't fix it. And it shouldn't be the government's job to fix the market. It should be the government's job to protect the people who the market can't and won't serve.
Right.
That requires an ideological reorientation to kind of wean off of these neoliberal policies that have been in effect the last 4 years, and kind of refocus on people who need government subsidies and government protection right now.
Right. So I just have one final question. So as you know, Councillor Carr has submitted a motion to review the city's housing programs, which includes Rental 100. What are you hoping will come from that?
I think that's a very positive motion. I support that. I spoke in support of it last night. I hope that they will actually put some substance into the definition of affordability. Currently in Rental 100, affordable rents are defined with a combination of comparison to the cost to own in a neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and comparison with where the median rents in the neighborhood are. It might be a little more complicated than that, but mm-hmm. they call it affordable if it costs less to rent than to own.
Right.
And that's a very wide window, enough to be completely meaningless. So bringing that definition back to the CMHC definition, which is 30% of the person's income, I think is a very important first step. And if we can't achieve that kind of affordability under existing programs, then we need to think more creatively about how to create a situation where we will be able to deliver this kind of affordability. We need to build 10,000 units of social housing every year in BC in order to solve the housing crisis. So,
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Sarah.
No problem. Thanks so much for your questions.
That was Sarah Sagai of the Vancouver Tenants Union. To offer a different perspective on how to make Vancouver more livable and affordable for renters, we also reached out to Karen Sawatsky, a former chair of the city's Renter Advisory Committee and a member of Abundant Housing, though she is not speaking on behalf of them. Karen is in favor of the city's Rental 100 policy and tells us why. Take a listen.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And can you tell me just briefly why you support Rental 100?
I support Rental 100 because we have a very severe shortage of rental housing and have had for the last 30 years. And not having enough rental housing is, I think, the fundamental issue that really empowers landlords in relation to renters. And obviously, landlords are always going to have, you know, power over renters because they own the housing. But when housing is so scarce, it really gives landlords a lot more scope and leverage against renters to, you know, maybe not follow good practices, landlord practices, and also to, you know, charge premiums for rental housing. And when there's not enough of it, the people who are going to get the rental housing and the best rental housing are the people with, you know, the most money and the most social capital.
According to the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, in the last 3 years, we've seen a substantial new supply added to our purpose-built rental market. And in 2018, Metro Vancouver's vacancy rate did rise very slightly, but simultaneously, average rents in Metro Vancouver went up by 6.2%. So it seems like the construction of purpose-built rental, as it's happening now, much of which in Vancouver is incentivized under Rental 100, is increasing average rent costs more than it's raising our vacancy rate. So what do you see as the solution to this?
Well, I don't agree with the premise of that whatsoever. First of all, say that, you know, we had a substantial increase. I mean, you've got to compare that to demand. I mean, you need to look at the vacancy rate. What is the vacancy rate? That's what measures how much rental housing we have in relation to the demand. And it's, you know, it's still under 1%. That hasn't changed. So, you know, the amount of rental housing versus the amount of rental housing we need is measured by the vacancy rate. Obviously,
right.
We don't have enough. Under 1% is not a healthy vacancy rate. Around 3 to 5% is a healthy
Vacancy. So I did bring up the change in vacancy rate. So you're saying that basically we just are not building enough rental.
Nowhere near enough rental.
Okay.
And we're not building enough for current demand. And we also have a 30-year backlog.
Right.
So of course, when something is so scarce, of course, the cost of it is going to be very high. You know, it's not Rental 100 that is increasing the cost of rental housing. It's the fact that we don't have enough.
Mm-hmm.
Rental 100 is not.
So what how do you see us building more rental housing?
Well, for one thing, we need to maintain the Rental 100 program because if you look at the stats and the history, it's like when we finally started to actually build it, it's directly correlated to that program. So we need to maintain what's working.
Mm-hmm.
And then we probably need to do a whole bunch of other things to make rental housing building even more attractive, because developers do have an alternative, which is to build condos. And that's a much more attractive and financially appealing alternative to them. And that's why we need an incentive program. And then there's government programs like, you know, the GST on rental housing that the federal Liberals said that they would take that off rental housing, and they didn't. So,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right. So you're basically like at City Hall on Tuesday during a public hearing on a couple redevelopment projects under Rental 100, the second one being at 815 Commercial Street. So we heard like what you mentioned, this kind of the two options in front of council, which are either developers build condos, which are inherently more expensive than renting a rental unit,
mm-hmm.
or developers are incentivized by the city to build rental stock. And so like Sarah Sagai of the Vancouver Tenants Union identified that as a false binary. And so you're sort of saying those are the two options, but are there third options? Like what about rental only zoning? Or do you see that as the binary that we're being faced with? Or is there something else we can do?
Well, you know, I'm not the one who presented that as a false binary. So if people think that there are alternatives, I'd like to know what they are. And I haven't, you know, so if they're saying rental-only zoning is an alternative, I'm fully behind rental-only zoning. I'd like to see that come in, and I'd like to use it. I'd like to see cities use that not only to preserve existing housing as rental housing, but to expand the area where rental housing could be built. That doesn't exist for this project right now that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the provincial government has enabled it, but it requires policy changes at the City of Vancouver.
Right.
So that's one thing. So I don't know what other options they're talking about. You know, if you say, you know, that's a false binary, well, tell me what the other options are. If it's rental-only zoning, well, that's great, but it doesn't exist. You know, it's not an option for this property right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're saying, well, you should just, you know, say no to this rental project because it's too expensive and wait until rental-only zoning is in place, well, that doesn't work because the owner of that property can just say, okay, you know, the existing zoning allows me to build a four-story condo. I'll just do that instead, and I don't need to come back to you for any permission. So we'll lose any rental housing at all if we take that option. And then the other thing is, just because you have rental-only zoning, you can't force people, developers, to build projects that don't make financial sense to them.
Right. So then, like, when people criticize the rental rate caps under Rental 100, which are still quite high, you know, $2,500 or more for a two-bedroom, you would say that if a developer or the owner of that property doesn't charge that amount for rent, then they wouldn't be able to make enough to make the project profitable? Is that how you look at it?
You know, one thing I think that maybe people might not understand is, like, most developers are not building rental housing out of their own, you know, piggy banks. They're going to banks and pension funds and stuff to finance that. And so in order to get that financing, you know, they have to show that there will be a rate of return that is satisfactory to those investors. And so that's just, you know, how it works. So in terms of, you know, an individual project, developers will make more or less of a return on different projects. And, you know, again, it's not really something that the city government has control over. They can't force developers to build things that don't make financial sense to them.
Right. I mean, they could make that cap lower, though.
They could make the cap lower. I mean, you know, in your interview with Councillor Carr, mm-hmm. she's saying, you know, we need to change these rates. It's like, well, you could change the bylaw and put whatever you want on it, and I guess pat yourself on the back for, you know, writing a bylaw that has, you know, the numbers in it that you think are should be in there and they're affordable. But you cannot, again, they can't make the developers go, yes, that makes sense for me to build that with those numbers. There's over the last 8 years or something like, you know, 7,400 rental units were, you know, are in the process. They're not all built, you know, they're approved in at some stage in construction. Those weren't all Rental 100 projects, but the vast majority of them were Rental 100 projects. So, you know, would we be better off without those, you know, 7,400 units that have been approved in the last 8 years?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing, though, is like it makes sense to me that people would be upset, though. For example, if we look at on Tuesday night's public hearing, the redevelopment at 815, so, you know, there's like 20 plus renters there paying much more affordable rates, and then they're going to get displaced for this new Rental 100 project. So I understand what you're saying, like, this is, mm-hmm. it's adding more units to the rental market, but, yeah. you know, what do we do right now for those people?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'm a renter. Like I said, I'm a lifelong renter. I live in an older building. So, you know, I have to deal with these pressures. So we're in a crappy situation. That's, you know, the product of 40 years, you know, 30 to 40 years of terrible housing policy and basically giving no regard for renters and rental housing and focusing all on homeownership and also the federal withdrawal and the provincial withdrawal from funding, you know, social housing. Over those decades as well. So we're in a terrible, terrible situation. And, like, there are no easy solutions to it, and especially at the level of city governments that, you know, have a lot less revenue and fewer powers than those senior governments. So what do we do for the people that are displaced? Well, that's why the City of Vancouver has, you know, a policy that, you know, has been, again, a leading policy in the region in terms of compensating and, you know, offering some assistance and to existing renters. And then, you know, that policy has been expanded a couple times and reviewed a couple times. It's currently being expanded and reviewed. That was started under the previous council to review that in terms of the amount of compensation and what kind of rents that people can return at. So right. If we can expand that, that's great. But again, most of those levers are not within city control there. That's mostly about the Residential Tenancy Act.
But so right now, if, like, under Rental 100, we're not building enough rental. So, you know, the vacancy rate is going up slightly, and overall the cost of renting each year is going up quite a bit or more than the vacancy rate is rising. So right now, like, if we keep things as they are and are only incentivizing the same amount of rental that we're building right now, then aren't we just going to see rents keep going up, the average rent keep going up in Vancouver? Like, do you still think this is better than having an alternative program or no Rental 100?
Well, first of all, we've got something that's helping, so don't abolish it. If what you mean by helping is, you know, in terms of improving the program, is, you know, changing it in a way that increases the amount of rental that's built, of course, yes, let's do that. But I mean, it's not only Rental 100; it is also about the amount of land that's available to build multifamily housing on,
right?
And rental housing being a subset of that. So we definitely need land use and zoning changes.
Making myself very clear. So if the average price of renting in Vancouver is going up every year with this program in place, like, do you not see that as a problem?
I see it as a problem that rents are increasing so fast, and I see that mainly, the reason that rents are increasing so fast, mainly as a function of scarcity.
Okay.
Of rental housing. So, you know, what would help the most to moderate rents is if we had an adequate amount of rental housing, which is, we need a lot more before
right.
we're going to be able to you know, touch that, because again, we have such a backlog.
But so yeah, and I understand that. But then, so okay. if like the amount of vacancy, so we added all this new rental stock in the past few years, in part because of the Rental 100 program, and the vacancy rate dropped a little bit, but the overall cost of the average rent went up by like 6.2%. So basically, like what you're saying, if we need to add so much more to the market that it actually increases the vacancy rate to a healthy percent, like 3% or something, and then mm-hmm. we start to see prices drop, it just seems like that's not going to happen. You know, we'd have to add so much rental, and like you're saying, we have limited land. Like, do you think we're going to get to that point?
I think it's going to take years to get to that point, because it took us, you know, again, it took us a long time to get to it being this bad. It's been this bad for a long time. We have a huge backlog. So, yeah, it is going to take a long time. And that's why we need, you know, to greatly expand the area where we can build rental housing. Am I not understanding or getting? Like, I do think that we need to improve the program.
Yeah.
But, you know, if some people's idea of, quote, improving the program is making it so that it's less appealing for developers to build, that's not improving the program, and that's not going to create more rental housing. And the, you know, the more scarce rental housing is, the more expensive it's going to be. So, you know, that's what I got from listening to your interview with Councillor Carr. Is her idea of what improving the program is, you know, to make the rent that can be charged lower.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's going to work.
I understand what you're saying. I'm trying to understand, and I'm understanding, I guess, from the opposite perspective. I guess folks who want to see the rates of rent charged under Rental 100 drop to be more affordable, I guess they, and if that no longer becomes profitable to developers, then we're relying on government to build housing.
Well, I would love that. I mean, who wouldn't love that? Everybody would love that if there was a lot more money allowed available from, you know, a combination of the provincial and federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Please bring that on. People have been asking that for a really long time, and certainly have had a lot more investment from this provincial government. And, you know, apparently we're getting some more from the federal government too. That seems a little bit less clear in terms of when that money is actually going to be available. But, you know, I'm not... it doesn't seem like the amount of funding that we need to address our rental housing is available. So I, you know, I would love that if that was changed, but I'm not prepared to just sit around and wait for that to happen and not say that we shouldn't try some other things
mm-hmm.
while we're hoping for that to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for answering my questions, Karen.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
It was good to get your perspective. From a preservationist perspective, Sarah Sagai says we could use the development cost levies being waived for developments currently going forward under the city's Rental 100 policy to fund truly affordable rental stock by partnering with nonprofits. From an urbanist perspective, Karen Sawatsky says there isn't enough money to adequately address the housing crisis without more financial support from the provincial and federal governments, and that we need developers. On Wednesday, February 13th, City Council passed a motion tabled by Councillor Carr titled "Changing Vancouver's Housing Bylaws, Policies, and Budgets to Achieve Real Housing Affordability." Under this motion, Rental 100 and other housing policies will be reviewed to see how they can better meet the Canada Housing and Mortgage Corporation's definition of affordable, which is 30% of gross household income. Thank you for listening. This story was reported and produced by myself, Alex DeBoer. Editing by Zoe Power and myself. Voice acting by Isaiah Witteveen and Miles Black. Our backing track is Plaque by Young Hearts. And special thanks to the News Collective at CITR.